I always say the same thing, but why not? It's time. It is time for the Food Mensch. Arthur Schwartz on Robin Hood Radio. Hello, Mensch.
Hello, Jill. I'm withered, so I'm being very low-key here because...
A withered Mensch?
The weather has gotten to me. It always does in July. It's nothing new here. You know. You know, we say this is a time to drink your calories and not eat them. But, you know, I'm not a drunk, so... I've been having a lot of lemonade. That's refreshing. Just lemon water, basically.
That's
sometimes
true.
I sweeten it some with sweet and low, and sometimes I don't. Anyway, it's sandwich time, as far as I'm concerned, because most sandwiches don't require any heat to be applied. I know that Mike, our engineer, loves a grilled cheese sandwich, but I had to point out to him that requires putting a light under the pan and heating up my kitchen. I'm not doing that. So there's so many sandwiches that I like that I don't even, you know, allow myself because of the bread issue, but I've decided not to have a bread issue. Jill, have you ever had Ezekiel bread? I know you're not a bread person, but I thought maybe at some point you tried.
Say again, what kind of bread?
Well, that's a brand name, Ezekiel bread. What it is bread made with sprouted grains as opposed to milled grains.
Oh, yeah, yes and no.
Well, it's not my favorite bread in the world. However, it is extremely good for diabetics. It's very low in glycemic index. And actually, the Ezekiel brand, I rather like. And, you know, I can have a sandwich without thinking twice about it. High in fiber, a lot. Anyway, it's a good bread. Now, just the other day, I mean, for me, a sandwich is a lot about the bread. And these days, I don't want to commit myself to a whole loaf of some of my favorite breads that I can buy in the fancy supermarket around the corner, because they collect breads from bakeries all over the city. However, most of those breads are not suitable for sandwiches because they're too crusty, they're too dense. They just, I don't know, I don't really like them for sandwiches. I did buy, however, to try it, and I had some this morning, half of one this morning for breakfast. A brand called Something for Life. I can't even move this morning to go look it up, but whatever it is, it's another version of sprouted grain bread. In this case, it was English muffin. So I had a half of an English muffin this morning with this kind of bread, and it was okay. It wasn't any less interesting than breakfast cereal, that's for sure. I had it toasted. That's the only heat that I'm willing to turn on today is the toaster. And toasted, it was pretty good. I could have toasted it a little bit longer, so next time I'm going to make it a little bit longer. Got to say, my favorite sandwich, and it could be on Ezekiel bread, but it could be on a lot of different breads, is just a plain old tomato sandwich. I mean, all you have to do is slice up a tomato, and for me, put some mayonnaise on the bread, and I'm in heaven. Forget the bacon, forget the lettuce, although I like BLTs. Truthfully, I like the B and the T, the bacon and the tomato, way more than the lettuce. So I'm happy with just bacon and tomato sandwich. But then again, bacon requires heat, so I'm not doing that today anyway. By the way, I have been cooking bacon in the oven as opposed to frying it on top of the stove. It's much cleaner and easier. I just lay it out on a rack on a sheet pan, and you could put it directly on the pan if you want, but I like the air circulation. And you put it in a cold oven so you don't have to keep the oven on for too long. Set it for 400 degrees, and usually just a few minutes after, in my case, in my oven, a few minutes after it's gotten preheated, it's crisp enough. It's done. But still, you had to turn the oven on for that. So I'm willing to have just a tomato and mayonnaise sandwich, too. I like that, especially if it's good mayonnaise. So mayonnaise, at this time of the year, is my handiest condiment. And I actually sometimes make my own mayonnaise rather than use the commercial kind. But I have checked out various commercial kinds in recent years. I always fall back on Hellman's, which is, of course, the most popular real mayonnaise in our part of the world. By the way, the same mayonnaise is sold on the West Coast as Best.
Right. Bring out the Hellman's. Bring out the Best. It was
bring
one
out
of the
Best. Yeah.
One of the.
So that yeah. So I like Hellman's, but I learned a trick from my friend Rosaria in Salerno, who's a great, great cook. That when you want a more homemade tasting mayonnaise than the commercial out of the jar, well, they have that in Italy too. She beats in a couple of tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, which gives it a little edge. And I by the way, the other thing you could add to commercial mayonnaise is a few drops of lemon juice or vinegar. I like apple cider vinegar myself in the mayonnaise. So, but making mayonnaise, I did run out of mayonnaise the other day, and I was going to make it, and then I thought, maybe we don't need the mayonnaise today. But it's easy to do in the blender. You break an egg into the blender, and then add, I would say, a good half teaspoon of Dijon mustard, the juice of a half a lemon, a big pinch of salt, a few grinds of pepper. Whirl that in the blender for just literally seconds until it's all homogeneous, and then very slowly add oil. Now, an all olive oil mayonnaise is not very good. I don't like it anyway. So but I do like the taste of the oil, of course. So what I would do is I would use part peanut oil and part or whatever other oil you like, for instance, I guess canola oil. Avocado oil is these days very trendy in mayonnaise. So you put in about half of that neutral oil and half, or it could be two-thirds and a third. You're going to have to figure out your own taste for this. But for me, it's about two-thirds of tasteless oil to one-third of nicely flavored extra virgin olive oil. Anyway, whatever the oil is, you're going to need about a cup and a quarter, maybe even as much as a cup and a half. Makes a nice amount of mayonnaise. And you drizzle it in very slowly at first. And then you can speed up the addition with the heavier stream as it starts to thicken, emulsifies. The oil is emulsified by the egg. This is not going to be as dense a mayonnaise as you get from Hellman's, but it's going to be a beautiful consistency. And I do like to chill it for a while. It gets a little firmer in the refrigerator. And then put it into a bowl. And I have to say, just this mayonnaise with just some vegetables to dip into it is a treat. But I don't indulge that way. So I just put it in a jar and have it in the refrigerator. It'll last several days in the fridge. Tuna fish is one of our, I have to say, one of our mainstays in the hot weather. We like tuna fish out of the can. And I'm particular about which I buy. I buy skipjack or I guess it's yellowfin, the light, what they call light tuna, which is really dark tuna. Packed in olive oil. And tuna has gone up, like everything, tuna has gone up in price, but I think maybe on a percentage level a little bit more than other things. By the way, I went to buy coffee yesterday and was shocked at the price of coffee. The coffee that I used to pay $11 for is now $14. That's a big jump. And the coffee that I used to pay, I buy this really good coffee that's roasted in Staten Island. And it used to be very inexpensive, and now that's about $10 a pound, too. By the way, it's just a full pound. Unlike most packages of coffee, which are usually 12, at the most 12 ounces. So I do buy Lavazza when it's on sale, but when it's on sale. So anyway, back to mayonnaise. I've played with some other mayonnaises lately. Duke's is the mayonnaise that gets all the buzz lately. That's the brand that is most prevalent in the south and southeast of the U.S., Duke's. And so a lot there used to be a store in my neighborhood that catered to a lot of people from the south, and they carried Duke's. No more. I don't know why, but no more. You can order it online, of course. I don't think it's worth ordering online. It is a tiny bit maybe lighter and a tiny bit sweeter than Hellman's, a little bit different taste, not dramatic. And, you know, if you're going to pay a premium for it, you want it to be super special. But so I don't bother with that anymore. And the other day I bought Kewpie. Have you ever had Kewpie mayonnaise? It's the Asian mayonnaise. I have to find out exactly where it came from, but my guess is that it has something to do with Hong Kong. Remember, Hong Kong was British for so many years. Mayonnaise creeped into their cuisine. We still have neighborhood places, at least here in Brooklyn, that make those dishes with those Hong Kong dishes that come with mayonnaise. I don't know, fried pork with mayonnaise. I'm just making that up. So mayonnaise to me is essential. Now the bread, of course, is an issue because I try not to eat white bread, and the few times that I've had white bread lately, I didn't enjoy it as much as I used to. So I'm always looking for a whole grain bread, not just what I call beige bread, which is whole wheat bread, except that it's not whole wheat bread, because if you look at the ingredient list, you'll find that whole wheat is not the first ingredient on those kind of whole wheat breads. So I call it beige bread. And in fact, they put some coloring into some of these breads so they don't look as white as they would if they didn't have the coloring. Then there's real good whole grain bread. Now, you got to be careful, because a lot of breads will tell you that they're multi-grain, but if you look at the label, it's mostly wheat and not even necessarily whole wheat. And the other grains are minimal, but they have them so they can call it multi-grain. And I find that most of the other multi-grains are on the surface of the bread. You know, oats on the surface. There could be seeds. I don't know why they consider that grain, but they do. Sunflower seeds or whatever, poppy seeds, sesame seeds. I mean, really, it's about seeds and little tiny bits of whole grain in those breads. Then there are the breads that have, you know, significant amount of whole grain, not just wheat, but other grains, multigrain. And some of them are too dense, I feel, for a sandwich. Unless you're eating, as Mr. Harnett loves, an open-faced sandwich, which is to say one slice of bread with whatever you're going to put on it, and no covering slice. So it's not a sandwich. Well, to me, it's a sandwich, but it's an open-faced sandwich. One of the ones we like best is to put on the very kind of health loaf heavy grain bread, which is full of fiber and is usually low in the glycemic index, which means that your body metabolizes it slowly as opposed to giving you a shot of sugar in your veins. And a tuna. And lately, I've been actually making my tuna in the mini processor. I like a coarse mashed up with mayonnaise tuna. But in this case, what I've been doing is to extend it a little bit and give it some zing. I take a few vegetables from my jar of giardiniera, which I keep around. Giardiniera is nothing but pickled vegetables. And the classic giardiniera that you can buy in a jar in the supermarket usually has cauliflower, carrots, very often too many of those little green spicy peppers, could be a piece of celery in there, red pepper. So take a few of those vegetables that are all pickled. You choose, it doesn't matter really which. Put those in your processor with a drained can of tuna. And I would say a good 2 tablespoons, heaping tablespoons, of mayonnaise, and zip it through the mini processor. Don't make it too fine. Don't make it a paste, although, you know, that there's an appeal of that, too. And I used to use this mixture to fill little hot peppers, which is really, I must say, a great thing, but it also makes a good sandwich. So you can put that on a slice of health loaf, and the tangy vegetables balance out the fatty mayonnaise, and it's really good. The peppers that I used to use for this are those Pepperdews. Do you ever buy the Pepperdew peppers? There's a little round red pepper that is both sweet and spicy, sweet and hot. And those are very common these days. When I first started doing this years ago, it was not so common, but now I see them everywhere, in jars, in the olive department where they sell loose olives, and all those kind of places in the supermarket, they have it, those peppers. And if you have the patience to stuff little peppers with the tuna mixture, it makes a very good, let's say, hors d'oeuvre, appetizer, snack, or even just part of a bigger salad plate. Very good. Tuna. So what else do I do with tuna? Many, many years ago, meaning when I was a teenager, my best friend's aunt and uncle lived around the corner from my best friend, and Aunt Nancy, who was a reluctant but very good cook, would have us over for lunch. She only had a daughter, no son, so she liked having the two boys over. And what she would make is something that I have made for many, many years now, Aunt Nancy's tuna salad, which is a can of tuna, a can of, in those days, Progresso brand caponata, which is the eggplant appetizer from Sicily. It has eggplant, celery, olives, capers, sometimes even raisins, sometimes pine nuts. Anyway, years ago, I liked the Progresso canned caponata, and so Aunt Nancy would give me a can of tuna mixed with a can of caponata, and then to make it a little fresher, she would dice up a little bit of red pepper, sweet red pepper, and red onion, a little bit of that fresh, give it a little crunch. There was already onion in the caponata, by the way. It's a sweet and sour thing, too. And that's it. And that is a delicious salad, whether you have it in a sandwich or not. I suggest not, but have it with bread, because it calls for bread, but not necessarily as a sandwich. So I haven't seen the Progresso caponata in many, many years, but I recently saw Cento. Some people say it's Cento, C-E-N-T-O, Cento brand, had caponata. So I bought it thinking I was going to do this. But I opened up the can of caponata, and besides, it didn't smell very good. It tasted worse. So I ended up throwing it away. And it encouraged me, however, to make my own caponata, which I think I outlined on air a few weeks ago. Did I? Do you remember, Jill? I mean, it is very easy to make caponata. The only part that you really have to think about is frying the eggplant. So for one egg, I'm going to give a quick recipe here. For one eggplant, I cut off the calyx, the top of it, the stem end, and you don't have to peel it, although it couldn't hurt to wipe it down with a wet paper towel, and then cut it into, I would say, 3/4-inch cubes. They don't have to be even cubes, and they won't be, but more or less 3/4-inch to an inch cubes. Those, I salt mine down, not because they're going to be bitter, but because salted eggplant does not absorb as much oil as unsalted eggplant. So I salt it down, which is to say, in 2 or 3 layers in a colander, I put the eggplant, sprinkling each with about a half teaspoon of salt. And then I put a plate on top of it and then something heavy on top of that to weight it down. And you'll see after an hour with salt, it will have expressed quite a bit of dark, dark juices. Now spread out the salted eggplant on paper towel and dry it up very well. And in 2 batches, you can cook it. This is not for this weather. This is in preparation for hot weather, because the caponata can stay in the fridge for a week at least. And so you fry the eggplant until it's getting a little brown all over. Take it out as it's done. And then in the same pan, You may need to add a little bit of oil, but I don't usually have to. In the same pan, you're going to cook a smallish red onion, diced. And while this is sautéing and softening, you could blanch a couple of ribs of celery that you've cut into half-inch pieces. And I just put them in boiling water for 4 or 5 minutes, drain them, and then that goes in the pan, the blanched celery goes in the pan with the onion. And then add, I would say, a half a can, or if you can find a small can, of peeled Italian tomatoes. If you have chopped tomatoes, you can use that. I wouldn't use puree in this case, but I want some texture. So I would say put in your tomatoes and break them up with the wooden spoon. And you're making a little tomato sauce is really what you're doing. Break them up, salt, pepper. Add, I don't know how many olives, as many as you have the patience to pit, and cut in half. Or if they're really big olives, you might want to cut them in quarters. Or you might want to cut them off of the pits if they're not easily pitted. One of my favorite kitchen gadgets is in Italian called a snocciatella, which means unnut. So I unnut them. Then also I want a couple tablespoons of capers. If they're salted capers, rinse them off. If they're not, you can just put them in. The ones that are packed in vinegar are okay in this dish because it is sweet and sour. And so let that simmer a couple of minutes and then put in your eggplant back in the pan and turn that around. Taste it for salt, pepper, and what I make it sweet and sour with these days is balsamic vinegar. But if you don't have balsamic vinegar, regular old wine vinegar, or either red or white, and maybe one spoon of sugar, just a little bit of sugar to make it a little bit sweet. It's not a sweet dish. It's sweet and sour. So balance out the sweet and sour, salt and pepper, and I don't think I left anything out. If you really want a sweet one, throw in a couple tablespoons of currants or raisins, and if you have them, you can add some pine nuts. I wouldn't go out to buy them, but if you happen to stock pine nuts in your pantry, this is a good use for them. Put in, I don't know, a couple tablespoons of pine nuts. If you want nuts in it, but you don't have pine nuts, walnuts will do too. They actually make a good caponata, and within the tradition of caponata. In Sicily, you find a lot of different caponata. They're not all the same. And one of the ones that I like best, actually, is one that I bought in the Capo Market in Palermo, is a caponata with fish balls, just to show you that fish and caponata are a pair. It's a good pair. I like it with a lot of different things. We just eat it for its own sake as well. A part of a salad plate, cold plate. Anyway, so here I am to use.
I have a really tangential thought.
Yeah.
That is, while you're making the caponata, you can cook your bacon.
No, the bacon.
No, I understand.
Bacon is in the oven,
which
in my case makes more heat than the top of the stove. I reminded Bob this morning that we got this electric water kettle years ago, when we still use it every morning and afternoon, for that matter, for tea, but that we bought it originally because just lighting the fire to boil water in the morning heated up the kitchen too much, and so we bought an electric kettle, which has stood us very well. The other thing is, now that we're old and we forget that we put up water, this shuts off automatically. There's no chance.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It's very. These kettles are very inexpensive, and I don't know, we've had ours maybe 10 years already, and it still works like a dream.
They're definitely...
It doesn't heat up the kitchen.
They are... I think they're a feature in many a kitchen, actually.
Yeah. So anyway, stay cool. Oh, sandwiches, you know, I've even ordered in sandwiches. I've been so lazy. But we discovered that my butcher, who's a great, it's a great store, they make Italian hero sandwiches.
Ooh.
And they do a really, really good job with the works and very high-quality cold cuts. Let us remember, these processed meats are called cold cuts for a reason. They don't have to be heated. Okay, everyone, stay cool. Drink a lot of water. Don't eat too much.
Thank you, Food Mensch. We always appreciate your diligence and your information. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.